Welcome in. It has been a busy week. We're almost at the finish line. A lot going on. Tomorrow, Ryan Silverfield's first big game as the Razorbacks football coach at Utah. We got baseball news this week. We got news out of the courtroom this week. A little bit of everything. We're going to cover it all today on our show. Christina Long in here in studio with me. Want to tell you that we're brought to you by Eglin's Best, and Arkansas greatness starts early. Before the pads go on, before the crowd roars, the day begins at the breakfast table. Eglin's Best delivers superior nutrition with more vitamin D and less saturated fat than ordinary eggs. You can start strong with Eglin's Best. Better taste, better nutrition, better eggs. For more information, visit eglinsbest.com. Also brought to you by Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They're committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. We put all of our podcasts on our YouTube page, search Whole Hog Sports. We've got audio versions on Spotify and Apple. You can search Whole Hog Sports there. We put them on our social media pages, Whole Hog Sports as well. You can go back yesterday and watch the conversation that I had with Hunter Yurchek up at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. And let's start there, Christina, because, you know, I thought there were two, you know, somewhat newsworthy items that he dropped there. Number one is that he said the baseball reseeding process at Baumwalker Stadium has generated $8.8 million in new funds to the Razorback Foundation. So for everybody thinking that, you know, whatever they think about this reseeding process, it obviously, I think, I was talking to someone after the luncheon yesterday, and they told me, they said, our data told us that this was going to be something that was pretty successful. I actually think $8.8 million in the first 3 weeks, and we'll see however much ends up this number ends up being, I think $8.8 million probably exceeded whatever the expectations were for the reseeding process in the first place. You think about Bud Walton Arena. It was, I think, about $11 million in recurring funds that they got out of that reseeding process, and then they got about $9 million in one-time gifts. That was about $20 million for a 19,000-seat basketball arena. Here you're talking about baseball. Suites are kind of the driving force behind this, and those suites have been really hard to get into over the years. But you've got baseball, you know, 10, 11,000-seat stadium already at $9 million. It's probably going to go over $10 million would be my guess before the whole process is over, and we'll see how high that gets. I don't think they thought it would come close to approaching what basketball did, and I don't think it'll ultimately hit that $20 million number that basketball did. But boy, $9 million almost in 20 days. That was a really fascinating number to hear.
Yeah, I'd be really curious what their projections were, what their expectations were for the duration. Because it's, I mean, the window is kind of open till like early October, right?
October 2nd is so, when people have to have their new, they've got until October 2nd to pledge at the new minimum levels to get, you know, to meet certain thresholds for tickets.
And I don't think there was really, you know, even if you asked fans who are not happy about the reseeding, I don't think anybody would question that it would work as far as from a money standpoint. Like, of course it's going to make them more money. That's why they do it. And that's why they, you know, Hunter Yurchek told you that they want to start doing this for all their venues every 5 years.
Yep.
Because it does work. And, you know, the only way it wouldn't work is if everybody decided that's too much and we're all going to stop donating and buying these tickets. And that's just not
it feels like we're a far long way off from that,
especially at baseball where there's so much scarcity and it's already so hard to get in, and it's kind of, you know, there's just only so many seats in a ballpark. Same reason why you probably think that it won't have the same it won't make the same money as basketball, because there's just fewer seats, there's just not that much to go around. But when you have that scarcity, people feel like, well, I have to give this if I want to have a chance to go. And that's really hard. And, you know, that's just kind of the name of the game. Like, these increased costs, it gets passed on to consumers. That happens in every business pretty much. And Hunter Yurchek said, you know, basically, I can't remember the exact quote, but he did say at the end, it comes at the expense of your fans. And they know that.
It's interesting to me how these schools use the sports that are outside of the top, you know, the two big money makers, football and men's basketball, to help drive resources that I think are eventually going to be put back into basketball and football's pockets. In fact, I asked Hunter yesterday, I said, you know, are you taking all of these funds and putting them into baseball? And he said, no. He said, they're going to go into a general pot to help balance the budget every year. I was reading about Nebraska. Volleyball is huge at Nebraska. They just, in fact, I think last night they reopened their arena. They had a grand reopening of their arena. And they went through a reseeding process for volleyball in the past offseason. And I don't know what the final number ended up coming out to be, but they were expecting that it would make between $4 to $6 million for volleyball. Wow. Okay. And, you know, I mean, and it's upset some people there too. You know, people who they had like a, I mean, they've got this insane stretch of sellouts for Nebraska volleyball. But you know, they're using volleyball. It wouldn't surprise me to say like Oklahoma softball is being used to maybe prop up other sports within their department. And there's some other examples of that, you know, throughout the country. That part is interesting to me, how, you know, I think people generally, if they're not in a hotbed for college baseball or college volleyball, like if they're not in Lincoln, you know, they would look at it and like, why is that? But when you're in it, you understand how important and how big of a deal that is to the people here in this community, or baseball in Starkville or Baton Rouge or wherever else. But it's fascinating to me that this used to be a value to go to a Razorback baseball game. You know, you'd see a winning team and you could do it for, you know, a pretty reasonable budget. Can't do that anymore, at least not if you're trying to be a new ticket holder. Right. Some of the existing ticket holders, that, you know, there's still some grandfathered processes that are in there to where they can, you know, kind of go at a, I guess, still somewhat of a relative budget. But how they're using this to you know, help balance the budget, like he said yesterday.
Yeah, and I think that is one thing that I think is a little bit difficult is people want to talk about where is the money going. And it's the same way. I always kind of think of it as like my own kind of personal budget. Like the money that I receive does not necessarily go toward one specific. It goes in my account, and that mm-hmm. goes for lots of different things. And so I think it's hard to say, you know, like this money is going to go toward this specific thing, because that's just not really how the sort of accounting works. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, people want to see, especially with a program like Arkansas baseball that is, you know, at the top of the sport, and is always trying to, you know, compete for championships. They do want to see, okay, if you're going to squeeze all this money out of us, I do want it to result in, you know, a good baseball team, a baseball team that continues to be competitive. And it's hard. I think there's some frustration about, you know, as fans, we're getting squeezed for all this money and our football team is doing what it's doing, or doing what it has done. And so that's where a lot of the frustration comes from.
The other thing that jumped out to me yesterday was that he said the renovation at Bud Walton Arena is no longer the priority that it used to be. That
it's off the side burner. He would always say it was on the back burner. It's on the side burner.
They've turned the burner off. Is what it sounds like. Yeah. He says that, you know, what they hope to do at Bud Walton and in some other, you know, because he mentioned that they're going to do kind of a similar deal at Baum Walker Stadium in 2028 to this courtside club that they built at Bud Walton Arena. If you don't know what the courtside club is, they repurposed an old club area at Bud Walton Arena and the old media work area, and they basically flipped them. They took the old media work area and they really, you know, glammed that thing up, and that's now the courtside club for people who sit in the, what do we call it, Gucci Row? Gucci Row, I think, is what Mike Anderson used to call that.
That's awesome.
on the side at Bud Walton Arena. And so they can go in there. So there's going to be something like that for baseball. But he said that these smaller incremental changes are what they're going to focus on instead of the bigger overhauls, like what was being talked about for Bud Walton. And, you know, the price of the price of material and the price of labor has really made that project skyrocket from where I think that they thought it could be 5 or 6 years ago. Now you're looking at, if you do this overhaul to Bud Walton Arena, like they've talked about, it's probably going to be in the $150 million or plus range. And I don't think they want to take on that type of debt. So it's going to be smaller incremental changes. And so all of these things that we've talked about for years, Bud Walton Arena, you know, they're going to do this, doesn't look like that's really going to happen, at least not on a large scale anytime soon.
I think when you talked to him last year at our Hogs Illustrated Sports Club, And you talked about this. He was saying that a lot of the money isn't even for, you know, creating more benefits for Gucci Row. A lot of it is just infrastructure, like stuff that just needs updates, stuff that is
just
old. There's
about $50 million in deferred maintenance.
So even if you just need to do that, that's a large chunk. And so eventually that's going to become a pretty critical issue if you leave that to
the
side for too
long. I think
they've
worked on some of that.
Yeah. So that's the kind of thing I would imagine that they're probably making that a little bit more bite-sized.
I think they got a new roof about a year ago. That was a big project to put a new roof on that building, and it was something that had needed to be done. I think there's some HVAC type work. I mean,
all of the unsexy stuff that's not.
All of this sounds very boring. You know, like this is the stuff that they don't show you in the home renovation shows.
Yes.
They show you a demo day.
This isn't on the YouTube tour they give to whatever podcaster goes in there.
That's exactly right. So, like, there's some boring stuff that they got to do at Bud Walton, but it sounds like that big renovation's not going to happen the way that they thought it was. Talk to him a little bit about Ryan Silverfield. He continued to talk about just the attention to detail that Silverfield had. And that's really the thing, and I wrote about that in the last magazine that we put out a week or so ago, is I said, I don't know how many games Silverfield's going to win. But I do know that if he does not win at Arkansas, it's not going to be for a lack of attention to detail. And I thought it was interesting to, you know, hear Juracek kind of expand on that a little bit about his attention to detail. And this is going to be a good segue into talking about Arkansas and Utah this week. I felt like, and I think why people were so frustrated with the outcome, and I would put Silverfield in this boat too. I think why people were so frustrated in the outcome last week is that he's talked all offseason about, we're going to have attention to detail. You're not going to have penalties. You're not going to have the turnovers. You're not going to have the lack of, I don't know what the word would be, the lack
like
of energy.
Energy. And, yeah,
I mean,
energy,
it just it looked lethargic and sloppy last week against North Alabama. And I think everybody knows, you look back at last year, they beat the pants off of Alabama A&M. They beat the pants off of Arkansas State. But there were moments in those games where it was like, this just doesn't look right. Mm-hmm. And there's something in the back of your mind saying, when they start playing better teams, this isn't going to go well. And I think that those alarms started going off in everybody's mind last week when you can't get a push against North Alabama on the offensive front. You know, when you're overthrowing a receiver in the end zone and have it intercepted and you got a couple of fumbles that you lose, it just felt like if you have that performance again, you're not going to win very many games. And you've got to get it – not only do you have to get it cleaned up, you got to get it cleaned up in a hurry because you're going out to one of the very best home field advantages in the country and a Utah team that perennially is a very physical team that does a lot of the things that it feels like are going to cost you if you have a performance similar to the one last week.
I kept thinking about – there was a – I think it was a column you wrote or maybe it was your kind of game preview, but – You had mentioned there have been recent years where some things have come up in the FCS opener that were harbingers of problems that were going to
plague them all
year.
In fact, one of the things I mentioned was the offensive line play against Western Carolina.
I was thinking about that the whole game. Mm-hmm. I was like, boy, I remember what a wake-up call that was for everybody. And, you know, there's a lot of games left. We'll see if it was a one-off thing or if they are able to improve on it. But, I mean, that's a huge concern. I think with Utah, Utah's a program I've always really liked. I've just always been a little bit partial to them because of I really like the kind of identity that they have and the identity that they had under Kyle Whittingham. I liked Kyle Whittingham a lot there. You know, they get a guy. They're the coach who replaced him, Morgan Scali, been on staff for 20 years, played there. So they definitely want to continue that identity. But I do feel like Utah is maybe a little bit more of an unknown than we're thinking, I guess. They definitely do. I mean, we've talked a lot, I think, and written a lot about how they had to replace both of their lines, offensive, defensive lines. Everybody. And we don't know yet how that worked because they beat up on Idaho. They did what you're supposed to do against your FCS opponent in a way that Arkansas did not. And so, honestly, this is a really big game for Utah, too, because this is going to have to be their kind of proof of concept that, yes, we're going to continue the kind of standard that we've had for the last 20 years under Kyle Whittingham. Maybe it's going to have a little bit of a new twist under Scali. He's a defense guy. What is that going to look like? I think there's maybe a little bit more unknown for them. That's what's extra interesting to me about this game is that you have two programs that are both trying to prove some things, I think, in this game.
I was on a radio show in Salt Lake City yesterday, and I mentioned something. And, you know, you build a team that you think is going to – let's put it this way. You build a team to try to compete the best you can in the SEC. And this is not a this was not a knock at the Big 12 or anything at all in that way. But, like, I feel like sometimes when you see teams that are, like, toward the bottom of the SEC, when they go out of conference and they play some of the better teams in the other, conferences, like the better teams in the other conferences. I feel like a lot of times they don't necessarily win those games, but they, you know, sometimes they play really well in those games, and they make it maybe a little bit more interesting than people think those games are going to be. And so I wonder if maybe Arkansas does go to Utah and makes it more interesting than people think they can, because you got Utah, they're picked to finish third in the Big 12. Arkansas's picked to finish last in the SEC. A lot of people look at this and say, well, Utah is in their home. Like I mentioned, they've got this great home field advantage. That's a game they're going to win. Like, let's just not even really pay attention to that. I wonder if it can be a little bit closer to that or closer than that, just because I do feel like, you know, the competition in the SEC is a lot better than the competition in the Big 12. Doesn't mean, you know, that Utah couldn't come to the SEC and win. It's just I think that you build your teams a little bit differently.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. And I think, you know, that's what's making this game so difficult. I didn't realize Utah was picked to finish third in the Big 12. That's really interesting.
Well, not by coaches. You know, the Big 12, they
quit. The media poll, yeah. Do they still do the media poll?
I don't think so. I think they got rid of it at Big 12 Media Days, and they got rid of it because a couple of years ago, Arizona State was picked to finish 16th in the Big 12, and they won the league. And they went to the playoff.
That's awesome.
And I think at that point they said, well, why are we doing
why
this?
Are we? Yeah.
So when I say they were picked to finish third, I'm going based off of a couple of different publications, Phil Steele's magazine and the Pick Six Previews magazine.
Gotcha.
They're picked to finish third behind Texas Tech and BYU in both of those.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, I think the Big 12 is interesting. The Big 12 has been really fun the last couple of years just because it's feels a little bit more wide open than some of these other conferences.
Yeah,
it really feels
sure.
like anybody from the middle up can win, whereas I think the SEC and the Big 10, the Big 10 in particular, it's like the same kind of small group of teams, and then you kind of have the middle sort of fighting it out for who's going to go in what order. And I think the Big 12, it feels more like, you know, Texas Tech is doing what Texas Tech's doing. BYU is a little interesting, but I think the Big 12 feels a little bit more open in terms of who's going to be at the top there. And I think Utah, you know, has become accustomed to being in that group. So I think you're right. It's interesting to see. I think the spread here is, I think Utah's favored by 12.5, which I can't decide if that's bigger or smaller than I would have thought.
I think it opened at 10.5.
Really?
I think,
there was
a lot of money that went to Utah the first day or two. I think it got up to 13.5 at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seems like maybe some people are starting to think, you know, more Arkansas's way.
Yeah.
I can't speak betting lingo.
I don't really either.
I have
a grasp on spreads and that's it. Somebody was talking about money lines the other day. I was like, don't ask me. I have nothing for you. I'm interested. So do you think Arkansas has to win in order for people to feel okay? Or do you think is a moral victory enough?
I think you can have one moral victory.
Yeah.
I think the first moral victory, not everybody. I think that some people will allow that. You can't have six games where you're close last year.
Yes, because then
you're the same thing.
Especially if you're turning the ball over the same way, you're having the same season as last year.
Yeah, that's like Spider-Man looking in the mirror and pointing back at himself. So I think if they go out there and they're competitive in the fourth quarter, I think that'll make a lot of people feel better about where the team is. But then again, I mean, you're still going to be having that thought in the back of your mind of this is a Big 12 team. You still got, you know, the SEC gauntlet that you got to run through. Two quick thoughts on conditions there. We've talked to some coaches this week about what does the altitude do to you. I think it's about 4,600 above sea level there. And, you know, and I asked Tim Cramsey this the other day, and he was the one that I was really interested in getting thoughts from. Because he had previously coached at Nevada, which was 4,600, very similar altitude to what they're going to have in Salt Lake. And they also coached at Montana State, which was like 7,000 altitude. And, you know, he said that he really doesn't think that, you know, the altitude in Salt Lake City is going to, you know, really affect the team. You know, they've just been talking about, you know, getting a lot of water and getting their body prepared for it in that way. I think sleep is something that's a big part of this, too, to help get you prepared for the altitude. So the expectation is the altitude's really not going to be that big of a factor. I will tell you, though, what something that was interesting to me, I was looking at the forecast last night, and this jumped off the page. It said that the winds are going to be about 10 to 17 miles an hour and could gust to 37 miles an hour in this game. And, you know, automatically when you think about wins, you think about kicking game. I guess my mind automatically goes to field goals, but then also, you know, punts. I mean, what happened?
Yep.
You know, you shank a punt. Or maybe, you know, wind gets hold of a punt and it goes 25 yards when it could have gone 45. But also think about the passing game and how it might affect the passing game for both of these teams. It feels to me, based on what Brandon Marcello was saying in here earlier this week, that Utah is a little bit susceptible in its secondary. If Arkansas could take some downfield shots,
which they did not do,
and didn't do it at all against North Alabama. I think they had two passes that were 20 yards or more downfield, based on the Pro Football Focus data that we got. But I wonder how the win might affect both of these teams' passing games. Utah's more of a team that runs it. I guess Arkansas is probably going to be a team that's about 50-52. But I just wonder that how that might affect the passing game.
And if you have problems in the run game again, like you did against an FCS team.
Yeah.
No. If you don't have, you know,
it does feel like things stack up against
Arkansas.
Then
what are you gonna do? Yeah, I think
it feels
so
like things stack up against Arkansas. I mentioned the home field advantage a couple of times. I do want to mention this. I looked this up today. Utah has the, I think that this is, let me count this real quick. I know this doesn't make for great TV or radio here, but I think this is the 12th best home field record in the playoff era.
Wow.
In the power conferences. There are some group of six teams.
How many
like,
Big 12 teams are in there?
Well, let's see. There's some group of six teams: Memphis, Boise State, App State, Toledo, and Liberty. And this is all based on win percentage. I discarded all of those. These are the teams. Alabama is the best, followed by Ohio State, Clemson, Oregon, Oklahoma, Notre Dame, Michigan, LSU, Penn State, and Washington. And then you have Utah.
So best in the Big 12, it seems like.
That sounds right. Yeah, I don't see another Big
correctly.
12 team in there.
Yeah.
I mean, Oklahoma was a Big 12
right.
team.
I guess for part of that.
For a long time at
that.
That's but
true.
Utah, 57-17 is their record at home in the playoff era. That is really good.
Yeah.
Like that is really a really, really strong record. And I don't know that if you're quizzing people about, hey, who has the best home field advantage in college football, I don't know that a lot of people are going to say Utah.
They
it
have
feels
a great
like that's
reputation,
one kind of like Washington.
Right.
It's kind of like a sneaky number there.
Yeah. Yeah. You're probably right. I feel like there's kind of the bias against the kind of Western teams of like, you don't usually watch a whole lot of their games. So you don't necessarily get a sense of, you know, how many people in Arkansas know a Utah fan? How many people in Arkansas, you know, Arkansas's never played there. They don't know that environment. So yeah, I mean, I think it's certainly interesting. I think their capacity is a little bit there. I think I saw some people posting this week about, I think their stadium capacity is in the 50s, maybe. So yeah, so it's
Brandon Marcello said like, he said it's got a real War Memorial type feel to
it. Oh, interesting. So yeah, people were saying, well, it's not even nearly as big as some of the stadiums Arkansas is going to play in. And I'm like, yeah, but sometimes if that's honestly even more impressive, if you can make it feel like a lot more, that's notable.
I feel, you know, War Memorial is a great example. War Memorial, when it's rocking, is one of the absolute great home field advantages in college football.
I've seen it rocking.
Well,
not back, since I've been like like an adult.
Back when you were young, it was a great place to play. And it was a great home field advantage for the Razorbacks. And it's 54,000 seats. Autzen Stadium, one of the absolute best home field advantages in the country. I think it's about 55,000 that it seats. Utah here. So, like this whole concept that you have to have 80, 90, 100,000 or more seats to have this great home field advantage is just nonsense. And I've always thought it's nonsense. Like it's there are ways that stadiums are constructed. War Memorial, again, a great example. Big concrete bowl where the sound just kind of reverberates. You know, you don't have to have this big old stadium to have a great home field advantage. Sometimes I actually think that the bigger stadiums are a detriment to home field advantage. You know, because I mean, maybe you got empty seats. I don't think you got to have 100,000 people to have, you know, a great home field.
Yeah, I kind of wish I were going to be there to see it this weekend. I'm jealous of our coworkers that are going to be there. It'll be a cool place to see a game, I think.
I looked this up. This is only the 10th time, by the way. One more little fun stat that I've looked up, because I've been looking up fun stats all week. Only the 10th time that Arkansas is going to play in a Western state. And by Western state, I mean in the Mountain, Pacific, or Hawaiian time zone. You know the first time?
No.
I actually told you this earlier in the
you
week.
Did?
You weren't listening. You weren't listening. Santa Clara. In 1938, Arkansas played Santa Clara in 1938
that's
in San Francisco.
Crazy. In 1938, that's crazy.
Yeah,
did you have to take a train?
That's a great question. Probably.
I would
think so.
Crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't even thought
putting
about that.
Putting a football
part.
Team on a train.
I don't think they took a wagon out there. But, I probably took the train.
Take the Oregon Trail.
It took them 35 years to go play on the West Coast again. They played Southern Cal in 1973. Three of these games that they played in Western time zones were in bowl games. So this doesn't happen very often that they go out there. Not very often.
And now they've gone
all.
To Utah twice in the last, what, handful of years?
Five
after
years.
They went to BYU? Yeah.
Yeah, they went to BYU in 2022. And they're going to go to Las Vegas in 2030 to play Texas Tech out there. Let's look at some other games around the country this week. I mean, obviously, Christina, the big game that everybody's focused on is Texas and Ohio State.
Yeah.
I mean, that's – remember how that game went last year? It was supposed to be this great game.
The Arch Manning and experience.
It turned into a slugfest This wasn't a whole lot of fun to watch.
I don't think we're going to have that problem this year.
I feel like there's going to be more points scored. You know, that's not a real high bar. It was 14-7 last year. I feel like Texas maybe I'm underestimating Ohio State. I feel like Texas got a really good team. I was impressed by what I saw from them last week when they beat up on Texas State.
Yeah, I didn't get to watch them last week, but in our picks that we do for the newspaper, I picked Ohio State. It was kind of a toss-up to me. I think I maybe am a little bit more of a believer in Ohio State right now. Mm-hmm. Texas, but I think we'll get a much more exciting game. I'm looking forward to watching this one. That's the nice thing about Arkansas playing so late.
Yeah.
We get to actually watch a lot of games. But I think, you know, it's going to be a very different experience. Last year it was kind of there was so much hype with the Arch Manning thing, and then he just didn't play that well in that game, and I think we're gonna see a very different version of him now with a season of experience.
Texas is a 1.5 point favorite in that game. There's like some sneaky games, you know. Arizona BYU is kind of an interesting game this weekend.
I'm interested in Minnesota Mississippi State.
Yeah
I'm curious.
Mississippi State
that.
Goes to Minneapolis.
Yeah.
To play Drake Lindsey,
yeah.
and the Gophers, the quarterback from Fayetteville. Not a lot of great games. Like, OU goes to Michigan. I think that people thought that might be a great game in the preseason, and now everybody's, you know, is Michigan really 1-0 or are they 0-1? It feels like Oklahoma's walking into a trap right there, because you're going to Ann Arbor and you're playing a team. We mentioned how well, you know, that we respect Kyle Whittingham and what he's like as a coach, but you're playing a team that everybody says, well, they're just not any good. And OU, you beat up on UTEP in the first game. And you ought to go in there and win this. They're a 5.5 point favorite. It just feels like one of those type games where you look at it in the fourth quarter and Oklahoma's losing by like 10 or 14 points. And you're saying, boy, we really overreacted to week one.
I'm not sure how much to expect from Oklahoma this year either. Just, I don't know. I feel like I never have a good – just when I buy into the Oklahoma hype, they let me down. And then this year I'm being a little bit more tentative just like for the season. I'm not sure how much to expect from them.
Kansas and Missouri's this week. You're a Mizzou grad.
It's tonight.
It's tonight.
Yeah, it's tonight.
Like, explain for people who have never been part of Kansas, Missouri, just like how much they hate each other and why the hate is, because it's not just like it's so much more than a you know, two fan bases. It's like, this is like real life.
It totally is. It was kind of a bummer when I went there because they weren't playing when I was in school.
Yeah.
And so it was a little bit different, and Missouri was kind of in this weird space that I think Arkansas has also kind of found itself in with some of the, you know, the way they've changed rivalry games with new additions to the SEC. And they were kind of adrift in terms of not really having a rivalry, and I think everybody kind of wanted this game back. So it's really exciting. You know, it was really fun last year when they played. You know, it's the kind of thing where everybody, there's so much crossover between the two states. It's kind of like an Arkansas and a Texas, just because of how much crossover there is. Everybody knows somebody, especially if you're from Kansas City. Everybody knows somebody from the other state. Everybody knows somebody from the other school, that kind of thing. It also has, like, literal war implications
Civil
in their
war.
History. If you have not seen the video, I don't know why I'm encouraging people to watch this, because it makes Missouri look very bad.
Go to Kansas, KU put social
out,
media.
They put out a crazy video.
Was that John Brown who was in the...
Yes, that's John Brown, the crazy... Yes, yeah,
he looks insane
yes,
in that picture.
It goes back to like Civil War tensions, you know. If you don't know why the Jayhawks are called the Jayhawks, you should look it up. it's... So they put out a crazy video. It's honestly... Unfortunately, they did get us. My Missouri student, like, you know, my friends from Missouri, we've been texting about it. We've been like,
that's one of those that you
this
just,
is a tough one. You just can't
you
comment on
it.
You can't, you got nothing. You're like, sorry. All I have is Mr. Brightside. I don't really know what to tell you.
All right. So KU is a 4.5 point dog at home to Missouri tonight. Missouri ranked number 23 nationally. All right. Let's talk about Arkansas, Utah. 12.5 point spread. I think we both think Utah's going to win the game. The question is, do you think Arkansas can keep it close?
I hope so, or we might be in for an interesting year. Uninteresting is the better word. I think that I am, if I'm looking for optimism, it is the fact that, like I was saying before, there is more unknown about Utah, I think, than everyone is thinking. I think that they are, like I was saying, out to prove some things as well. So I don't think I'm ready to say that Utah is just going to be a dominant team. I think that we don't totally know what their strengths and weaknesses are yet. We know they have a lot of key pieces back with their running back, their quarterback. Their quarterback is going to be difficult. It's going to be a real test for Arkansas. I think some of their weaknesses, we don't really know those yet because Idaho didn't test them.
Yeah.
So they might have some weaknesses that Arkansas is actually really favorably able to exploit. I just feel like we don't know yet. And so if I am looking for a reason for optimism, it would be that. It would be we just aren't sure what room Arkansas is going to be able to find to kind of find some weaknesses there. I am still expecting Utah to win. I don't think I'm expecting a blowout. I don't know if I'm expecting, you know, last second sort of antics. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's a blowout.
I expect it to be close in the fourth quarter.
I think Utah.
I think Utah is the better team, but I expect it to be close in the fourth quarter for some of the reasons that we talked about earlier. I think Arkansas, I think the performance last week gets their attention. I think that, you know, if you ask people there, I don't know if they had a good week of practice or not, but I bet they had a tough week of practice. Utah, you know, there's it's easy to be maybe a little bit more complacent whenever, you know, things go so well in the first game. And then, you know, the thing that I said earlier about how you build a team for the SEC and the rigors of the SEC, and whether or not they'll win in the SEC, we'll see. But you build a team that you think is going to put you in the best position to win against those type of teams. I think that translates when you go out of conference and makes you play competitively in those games. Arkansas, like I can't pick Arkansas to win on the road, especially in an environment like this, until I see that what Ryan Silverfield himself throughout the entire offseason called a loser mentality. And they have had that mentality late in games in the past. And so, like, I have to see them overcome that. And I know that there's a lot of new players here who weren't part of that team last year, but I've got to see the program overcome that before I feel comfortable picking them on the road.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think this game is such a big opportunity for them to change the kind of week one narrative, to change the last season narrative, just all these things that are hanging over their heads. It kind of sucks that that's hanging over them in a game that's going to be tough to win. But I also think, you know, they've known this challenge was coming. We've all kind of been, we've been excited that there's an important game in week two instead of having to wait a while before meaningful football happens. But this is a really, really big opportunity if they can seize the moment.
Mm-hmm. Reputation. They've got to change their reputation. Yeah. The only way to do it is to go win a game like this. So the question is it Utah where the reputation starts to turn, or, you know, does it just continue to kind of go down the same path that they've had in the past? So that's our thoughts on Arkansas, Utah. We're going to have a lot of coverage from it. We've got a team out there in Salt Lake City this weekend. We're going to have coverage here in Fayetteville, too. Baseball practice just began. They're going to have a couple of scrimmages at Baum Walker Stadium. Always a ton of interest in Razorback baseball. I'll be out at Baum for those scrimmages, and I'll have some stuff this weekend from that. And we'll see you back here on Monday. Hope you have a great weekend.
LPGA Week in Northwest Arkansas returns this September as we celebrate the 20th anniversary of the Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship presented by P&G. Join us September 21st through the 27th at Pinnacle Country Club in Rogers to watch the world's best female golfers compete. Plus, enjoy family-friendly activities, food, and entertainment all week long. Tickets start at just $10. Visit www.nwachampionship.com to learn more and purchase your tickets today.